I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But as you heard coming in there, Dodgers Radio Network, Orioles lose last night 6-4, a game where the offense actually produced early on. Three early runs of support there in the second inning for Corbin Burns. But as we talked about here time and time again with Corbin Burns, this nightmare month of August continued. Terrible start for him. You could say the defense let him down, but his final line, one of the weirdest you'll ever see for a pitcher. 5 innings, 5 hits, 6 runs, only 1 earned, and 4 strikeouts. So on the surface, Vinny, I mean, we were talking about a little bit before the show started, and you said, you know, the defense kind of let him down, but I don't know if I'm as forgiving right now.
Yeah, and the thing about it is the Ohtani home run, I mean, Nolan, I mean, come on, how many guys other, maybe Judge would be the only other guy that could hit that. I mean, he didn't even use his legs. He just, like, wristed out there. That was, I mean, because it wasn't a bad pitch, and Ohtani, I mean, it's just like, yeah, Ohtani did that.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
He's going to win the MVP again. And to be honest, I mean, look, solo shot in the first inning.
Fine.
Corbin Burns has been there plenty of times.
Yep.
When he was at his best earlier this season, he'd give up a solo shot a game. And it never deterred him. It usually came early on in the game. He'd lock in and throw 6 more scoreless. The difference now is that he just doesn't have that same composure. And I see 3 errors in the box score here. And a lot of people will say, oh, the defense let him down. Are those plays that need to be made? Absolutely. But from my perspective, when you're an ace, there's a little bit more of an expectation that you're going to navigate trouble. And again, when Corbin Burns was good, he was able to do that. When things didn't go his way, he was able to survive. Last night, that wasn't the case. I mean, the Ramon Arias one, all right, he boots the play. Runners on first base with 1 out. What does an ace do in that situation? Either induces a double play or gets the next 2 guys quickly, but maybe throws 10 more pitches because of the error. Later on in the, what was it, the third, the terrible inning. I mean, just a meltdown. But I don't know. How did you feel about Burns? Because for me, it just, I can't really excuse it. Only 1 earned run, but to me, all of those were.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I see, Nolan, is inconsistencies. I mean, because you see it, 1 run in the first, none in the second, 4 in the third, none in the fourth, 1 in the fifth. Just kind of inconsistent. And like the home run to Hernandez, I mean, you heard McDonald and you heard, yeah, Ben and Palmer talking about it. Because prior to that, to Hernandez, you know, he left a couple up. And, you know, they were hanging. And the one that he crushed was, because they said it, another hanging curve. And he's just not getting the strikeouts he used to get. Oh, what, 3 years in a row now his strikeouts have gone down. And with 2 outs, he's not getting them out. He's not closing out the innings. That's the thing. And was the infield, was the defense poor? Yes. I mean, Urias, Gunner. And then, like we were talking earlier, the play that Ohtani stole third, he could have easily scored because he blocked the ball. The ball was going into the outfield. That would have been another error on McCann. And then, to me, one of the bigger ones was O'Hearn, the live drive Ohtani hit to him with a man on. He catches that. He just steps on the bag. It's a double play. And he drops it, and they get to force at second, and then Ohtani's on first, and then he steals, and then it you know, just gravitates from there. So that would have been bam, bam. You'd had 2 outs, no runners on base. So it was. I don't think that he was sharp, Burns, and I think defensively they let him down too. I don't think it was a great defensive game.
And to your point, I mean, when you're facing a team like the Dodgers, you can't have those mistakes. They're too good. 1 through 9, they're maybe the best lineup in baseball.
I would say this, Nolan, there was, in my mind, at least 5 mental errors by the O's defensively. 5 mental errors. I mean, Lou Holtz used to tell us, if you have more than 3 mental errors in a football game, you're going to lose. So, I mean, if you have 5 in a baseball game, for surely you're going to lose that. And they did. And if they don't make any of those mistakes, they win the game. They win the game.
So I think my biggest gripe with Burns last night, or the reason that I'm not really willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, one, I mean, it's been a terrible month since it started.
He's 0-for-3, Burns.
Right. So, I mean, I think they won 1 game that he started this month, but the last 3 have been terrible. They lost all 3 of them. That's just not ace stuff. But in that 5th inning, you talked about the play where Ohtani steals second.
Yep.
I mean, all of this, he was going to second. He was going to land there no matter what. He had a good jump. Burns can't hold runners. I accept that. He's on second, no problem. But Burns spikes the pitch there. And then on that same play, McCann gets credited with the error, the fielding error, because Ohtani ends up at third. So there's one of your 3 errors right there. That doesn't happen if Burns, you know, makes a competent pitch and doesn't spike it in the dirt. Couple batters later, he gets Betts to fly out. Now you have 2 outs. Ohtani's at third. Can you get out of the inning here? And then that's when Henderson has his meltdown. Not excusing Henderson. That's his routine of a play as they come. He's got to make it. But you're not even in that situation. Ohtani's still standing on second base unless he's going to take off and steal third, which, to be fair, is also a possibility. But he should still be standing on second, and it shouldn't even be a factor. So Burns, on his play where he spikes it in the dirt, that doesn't go down in the scorebook as an error.
Right.
But that's 2 errors come after he does that. So that's the problem I have with it. If people want to point to the errors and say, oh, the defense let him down, well, I mean, how about helping yourself out?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let me just take a positive approach on the game, Nolan. How about Soto? You know, I thought Soto pitched well. I mean, I was kind of surprised. And he struck out Ohtani, did a nice job there. And then Kimbrel, he got out of the inning. I mean, they had a couple fly balls that were lengthy, but I mean, he still got out of the inning clean. 1, 2, 3. So, you know, that I take a positive out of it. That's the positive I take out of it. And, you know, Urias's bat gets 2 hits. The left side defensively was, the defense on the left side was not good last night.
No, I mean, Urias, fantastic. He stays hot at the plate.
Yep.
2 hits for him, plus the walk, I believe, or no walk for him, excuse me. But he did have 2 hits, scored a run. So maybe a little more willing to excuse the defensive mishap when you're actually contributing.
Well, really, when you look at it, though, he got a 2 RBI hit down the right field line. But then he gave, with his error, didn't they end up scoring 2?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that was the home run inning.
So they scored 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was a -1 in hockey terms.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. But you are right about the bullpen. And Keegan Aiken, too.
Keegan was good, too, yeah.
6 pitches to get through an inning. I'll take that every single time. And quietly here, very quietly, over the past, we'll say, 2 series, the bullpen actually been pretty solid.
Yeah.
So for a team and just the bullpen unit in general, which has been struggling mightily, for the past couple months, to have any sort of stretch of games where they're actually putting things together, I'll take that as a welcome change of pace. I don't know if I'm willing to say that Gregory Soto's all the way back or Craig Kimbrel's all the way back, but
I don't trust either one in a high leverage spot.
Sure, but it was a 2-run game when they were pitching. So, I mean, you're not protecting a 2-run lead. You are down 2 runs, but if that's playoff baseball right now or right there, and the Dodgers are a playoff team, I mean, that's a pretty substantial spot for them.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, I was totally impressed. The thing with Soto, it's all about throwing strikes. I mean, he gets himself in trouble just by walking people and throwing ball, you know, just not having control. And with Kimbrel, I thought, you know, I mean, he got down 2-0 in a count last night, this first batter, and I'm like, oh, no. You know, but then the guy hit the next pitch, hit the fly out to center. So that was like, oh, thank you.
Right. Soto there, 13 pitches to get through the inning, which is great, and 10 of them for strikes. So much, much different composure for him. It is Vinny and Haney here on 105.7 The Fan. We're going to hit a break. It is Total Request Thursday. I don't even know what show I'm on right now.
Yeah, it is Thursday.
Yeah, last I checked. Send any song request you got. Joe LaCroix is hanging out with us for a little bit longer. Thank you, Joe. If you text him a song, he'll play it.
Joe, what song do you want, Joe?
That's a good question.
Joe wants some Fish.
Play them all on my own show, so.
Yeah, he wants some Fish.
Fish?
Grateful Dead. We had Grateful Dead as a featured artist.
Oh, you did?
Week.
I missed it?
That was like the bat call to bring you back.
Ah, that's what it was. Yes.
Get your ass back here. No, but any song you want, we'll play it. We're going to take a break here. We'll take your calls on the other side, 410-583-1057. More Orioles talk coming up next.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Vinny and Haney here on 105.7 The Fan. Cordell Woodland in for Bob Haney.
Yeah,
and
sent
Nolan
him back
McGraw
to Norfolk already. that was a quick hook.
The hider hook. Get me out of there.
Before we get into any trouble, I appreciate Nolan stepping in for me, who's also stepping in for Bob Haney today on Vinny and Haney on this Total Request Thursday here with Vinny Serrato, my guy Quick Draw, of course, behind the glass. I'm on the way here. I heard you guys talking a little bit about the Orioles 6-4 loss last night. Wasn't pretty. I echo a lot of the things that both of you guys said. I'm kind of in the middle. I mean, when you have three errors, you got to kind of look at the defense a little bit.
See, I say it was five.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, you start adding up some of the hidden ones in there, the bases stolen and how they just kind of
hit Ohtani. Otherwise, two runners score there. I mean, it ended up being a home run. And then to me, one of the biggest ones, Cordell, that nobody, they weren't even talking about was the O'Hearn drop of Ohtani's line drive. Because he drops it, and it was a double play. It was an easy double play, because all he's got to do is step on the bag if he holds on to the ball. But he drops it, and then he gets a runner at second. Ohtani stays at first, and he steals second and gets a third and then ends up scoring. So that was a huge run, in my opinion. Otherwise, there's nobody on base.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is against a team like this, any mistake is going to loom large. And another error from Gunner, his 20th of the year. I mean, it's the routine plays. And they were talking about it on the broadcast last night about how he's just, I guess he said he feels more comfortable throwing the ball on the run. And it's like, all right, that's all good and well, but at some point you got to set your feet. Like at some point the fundamentals have to matter. And I'm as big of a Gunnar Henderson fan as anybody out there. I think the world of the guy, on and off the field, but they're compounding, like I said, against this team, you can't make but so many mistakes, if any. And then on top of it all, while I'm sitting here throwing tomatoes at the defense, and rightfully so, Burns has got to wear a lot of this too. I mean, when's the last time he looked like a legit ace?
This is
when you need him to be the ace. He's supposed to be the guy that, and like Nolan said, you have higher expectations for your ace. I do agree with that. You get into trouble, he's the guy that's supposed to get you out of that trouble. And you could see some of the frustration on his face last night with a couple of the home runs.
There was a few F-bombs.
Yeah, I mean, when he finally got out of that inning that Gunner made the error in, I mean, you heard something come off the mound. And he didn't aim it at anybody, but I don't think that bullet necessarily had a name. That was for whoever felt like it was for them.
Now, what did Hyder say after the game?
Well, I mean, I turned over as soon as the game ended. I rolled over and it was night night for me.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll hear some of what Hyde had to say. I'll start looking around. But I mean, what could he say? I mean, they played, I thought, good enough to win the game offensively at times, but you're giving them extra outs. You can't give a team like this extra outs. It's just not going to work out. The the Ohtani homer at the beginning, it is what it is. It is what it is.
That's him and Judge are the only ones probably hit that ball.
That dude is out of this world good. All right, you kind of got to live with that. But then you get the Teoscar Hernandez home run, and that's coming off of mistakes that were made.
That was a two striker too. I don't think it was 3-2, but I know there was two strikes.
And look, I want to give credit to Ramon. I know he had the error last night, but his bat stays hot. I mean, he's kind of carrying them offensively right now. I mean, last night, Gunner wasn't exactly sharp. 0-for-4 with the two strikeouts. Adley did have the hit with the strikeout. I thought two nights ago he swung the bat really well in game one of this series. Adley. I thought he took some really good swings in that one last night. And look, they're going up against the stud and Walker Buehler themselves. So it's not like they're out there going up against the slouch. This is a tough team to beat, especially out there. But even more reason why you need to play cleaner baseball than what they did last night. We could take a couple of calls. 410-583-1057. You want to call and talk about the Orioles. Let's start with Harry and Owens Mills. Harry, you're on the Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Court Elevated Nolan. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I want to talk a little bit about the Ravens.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Let me start by saying, Joe D, we thank you. I know I'm a little late with the comment. I know he passed away, but we really appreciate what he did for the Ravens. And I guess one thing, because I always look at Ravens Wired, and I remember the one where Lamar Jackson did the spin move against the Bengals, and he said he looked like a Ferrari going through back there. But now, with that said, so I have some concerns, and I hope that I'm wrong in saying this, because I'm a huge Ravens fan, just like all of the rest of us. But I also have a brain, and I also have to process information. So when I look at the offensive line, 2019, the Ravens were 14-2. They had Marshall Yonda as the right guard. Mm-hmm. After he retired that season, we had some struggles on the offensive line and really didn't get healed back up until Kevin Zeitler came along and the Ravens signed him. So now he's no longer on the team, and we're trying to mesh together this offensive line to compete in a very tough situation. Playing the Chiefs, we all know what's at stake because you're basically, and that's what's going to start with a two-game lead, whoever wins. And you look at, okay, number one, the Chiefs were embarrassed last year when they lost the Lions at home to open the season. They're not trying to have that happen again. And it's just, I think it's a very tough ask for the Ravens to try to put that offensive line together when it's such a tough situation where, that's not the situation. It would have been easier if we were playing a Patriots or a Giants team where you'd have a better opportunity to try to mesh them together, but that's just not the situation. And I am certainly praying for them, and I will root them on, and I certainly hope that I'm wrong, but all else being equal, based on what I said about the offensive line, if I had to make a choice, I would have to say the Chiefs are going to win this game.
Well, I would say this. There is nobody, nobody in the media, nobody I've talked to, everybody has concerns about the O-line.
Mm-hmm.
And, you look at first three opponents, Kansas City, Raiders, Cowboys. What do they all have? They all got elite rushers. Now, Cordell, I don't know if you saw this, but I texted it to Bob the other day. Top 10 pass rush duos in 2024. Number one, Steelers. Projected sacks between Highsmith and what? 21. Number two on the list, the Browns. Number three on the list, the Cowboys. Number eight on the list, the Chiefs. So, you're looking, and number nine is the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
So, three in your division are the top 10 duos in a league, and you're playing two of the three teams you start out with. And what I'm trying to, my point is, you got a scary offensive line, and your top duos in the NFL, three of the four in your division, and then the other one you're playing week three.
Yeah, it's not an ideal situation for sure. We got time for another call. Yes, Nolan gives the green light. Let's go to Matt in Maine. Matt, you're on the Fan.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
A couple things real quick, not too much, Cordell. Hey, Vinny, I know you have a saying that regarding quarterbacks, that if you have two quarterbacks, you have none, or something like that, right? I feel like you've said that before. And the reason I'm asking is this dual hitting coach thing, I know that it might seem like a minor topic point to start with, but I don't know what the deal is with this staff and what they've done to some of these young guys, but I feel like they're driving them into the ground regarding approach for something. Because there's no way a guy like Adley, unless he is completely hurt, should be struggling this much.
For this long?
After being an on-base machine. I mean, I remember last year, I feel like at this time, he and Judge were going back and forth for the on-base title. I mean, he was at close to 40% for most of the year. And unless he's really, really hurt, I just want to know what these hitting coaches actually bring to the table. I'll pivot quickly to another Orioles point. I won't keep you guys long. So this might sound absurd because I know Gunnar started in the All-Star game. They have got to take a look at Jackson at shortstop in spring training and Gunnar at third and Westberg at second. And they really need to evaluate whether that's a better defensive formula because Gunnar's what, 6'4", 6'5"? I feel like fatigue is setting in. Jackson, if his arm can hold up at short, the guy has been a shortstop his whole life, just like Gunnar. But I'm just wondering, is it a better setup with Jackson at short and Gunnar at third? And I'll hang up and listen to what you guys think. Thanks, man.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Matt. I mean, first to your first point on the dual hitting coaches, I think it's a fair criticism.
Have you
right
talked
now.
To those guys?
I haven't. They're usually Sundays are usually the day that they bring out some of the coaches. So I haven't been there when the hitting coaches have spoken. But I think right now with what you're seeing and the inconsistency, not just from the offense as a whole, but from their top guys, it does bear the question. I'm not sitting here saying I agree with it, but I can understand the concern that he would have for that.
Let me just say this, you know, because I've been a coach before and you've coached, you know, when your players, well, like Lou Holtz was the best delegator in the world, and maybe that's Hyder too. But if your position was struggling, the area that you were in charge of was struggling, he was going to get involved. Otherwise, he leaves you totally alone. And, you know, maybe that's the case with the hitting coach. Maybe Hyder or somebody else, they've got to get involved to help them get this right. Because right now, it's been a extended problem, you know, of hitting. And it's not just one guy. It's a bunch of guys.
Yeah. And even to his last point about kind of moving around this infield a little bit, moving Gunnar back to third base. And who did he say? Jackson over to shortstop and
Westberg
over at second. I mean, two of those guys that we've seen them at this level play those positions. We've seen Westberg at second base. We've seen Gunnar at third base. Jackson hasn't had to play much shortstop here at this level because obviously they have a need at second base for him. I still think Gunnar can work at shortstop. Obviously the errors drive me crazy too. And I do think being over at third base, it does eliminate some of the issues that he's been having. At shortstop, the fatigue is fatigue. You know, fatigue isn't by position. I think that's going to follow him no matter where he goes. It's probably more he has to do at shortstop. But that said, I don't know if they want to continue to move Jackson around as much right now. They're still trying to let him learn second base.
Right. Well, to me, you don't do it till training camp.
But yeah, it wouldn't be till then. But look, all options will probably be on the table that time of year. That's the time to kind of start playing around with things. We'll see. Gunnar has spoken out publicly about his desire to play shortstop. He's finally able to do it. We'll see if he's, you know, how open he'd be to move in positions again. 410-583-1057 is the number if you want to jump in. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, I did just come back from this press conference with GM Eric DaCosta. We'll talk a little bit about what he had to say, including the offensive line, finalizing this roster, the quarterback situation, and more next here on The Fan. Eric DaCosta there talking about this Ravens roster, finalizing the 53-man roster 2 days ago. They've also added 15 to the practice squad as well, and we got to talk to Eric DaCosta this morning, and Just speaking on the roster, he did talk about how they liked their team. They liked a lot of their guys. If you notice, the Ravens didn't put any waiver claims in on anybody. They also didn't have anybody claimed either. I guess that's a good thing for them. But
what it tells you.
Yeah, it tells you for sure, you know, what it is in terms of outside teams.
What people think of.
Yeah, what they think of their guys.
But I mean, Cordell, when you look at, and I like a lot of the practice squad guys, but the point I'm making is when you were playing these guys that are practice squad dudes, a lot of these dudes, they're losing to the Packers 30-7.
Right.
You know, and a lot of it was Leary turning the ball over.
Right.
You know, so, but I like a lot of them, and I like the development. And I think some of these young kids like Ishmael and stuff, I think some of them will help them next year and maybe towards the end of this year.
Well, you mentioned that Packers game. DaCosta called that game a joke. He said he couldn't wait for that game to be over. Obviously, you watched that Packers game. It was pitiful. Preseason game or not, it was a tough watch. Now, he did talk about, he was asked what he liked about his team, the strength of the team. He mentioned the secondary. He loves the secondary.
No,
he talked
no
about
doubt.
How they fielded calls on some of these guys. And
I wouldn't trade any of them either.
He didn't want to let any of these guys go. I think.
What did he say about Bo Braid? Because
he said he thought Bo Braid earned it.
He did.
Yeah, he thought he earned the spot. He didn't. He said he wasn't aware of, 20 out of the last 21 years that they've had an undrafted free agent make the roster. He joked, had he known that the 1 year that it, I think it was last year,
wasn't it?
Yeah, was it last year?
No, Keaton Mitchell made it last year.
Yeah, Keaton made it last year. Maybe it's not 20 out of 21. I forget what the time frame is, but yeah, he said it's not intentional. But on Bo Braid, he did say he felt like Bo Braid had earned his spot on the team, and I thought so too. I mean, you could say the same for Kane. I thought both of those guys
really
played
well.
Both.
Yeah, and I think both would be good special teamers. The thing with Braid, I think he got better every preseason game, and he showed up. And there's packages for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like his strength is going forward. His weakness is going backwards. I think, you know, playing coverage on the deep end. But he's a good football player. And I said this on Monday or whatever. I said if they cut him, I said he's not going to make it to the practice squad. But somebody's going to claim him, you know, and that's probably why. Because you're saying, oh, is he going to get with – and here's the thing you got to look at, too, if you're the Ravens. You've got three ex-coaches that are now on other teams. They're going to be looking at your guys. Why? Because they all know the system.
Right.
And it's an easy plug and play. So that's why Bo Braid, I'm sure, and even though these guys don't know Bo Braid, but they've seen him and they know that he knows the system. So it's an easy transition where offensively it's not as much. And what have we talked about? The defense? I thought the defense, it was tough cuts on defense. Because they're so good on the defensive side. They could have added more than 25 on defensive side. And we've said all along, they got great depth secondary. And they got great depth. I think they've got great depth in the defensive line.
Well, one of the other concerns I would say that people have had.
Pass rush.
The pass rush. He was asked about the pass rush, too. This was actually about the quarterback situation. You know, the backup quarterback, everybody is kind of asked, could the Ravens upgrade there? We saw Taylor Heinicke get traded to the Chargers. What was that, yesterday? Eric said he's happy, obviously. He's happy with the quarterbacks that they have, including Devin Leary. He was asked about the third quarterback rule and everything, and he flat out said we have a third quarterback. It's Devin Leary right now. So he did acknowledge that if they felt like a move could be made or there was a player that could be had, they would entertain that. But right now, he feels like they're set with the quarterback situation. He likes Josh Johnson as a backup. He likes what Josh Johnson's relationship with Lamar. So he thinks they're fine at quarterback.
Yeah, and I guess, did anybody ask him that when you go to practice Friday, or I guess tomorrow, or go to Kansas City on Wednesday, Is the 53 still going to be the 53?
Well, who knows? He wouldn't tell us even if it wasn't going to be. That's not even his MO. But it could change for sure. I mean, we're seeing teams around the league still make changes. Tyler Huntley got cut this morning.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility that this finalized, quote-unquote finalized roster isn't finalized to this point. 410-583-1057 is the number if you want to get in. We'll start taking more of your calls next segment. We'll also run down a little bit more about what Eric DaCosta had to say, including his thoughts on this offensive line. That's next here on The Fan. Coming up at 11, we have Tony Pente from Orioles Hangout. Talk some Orioles baseball with him. Orioles falling to the Dodgers 6-4 last night out in L.A. We're talking some Ravens right now. I was at the Eric DaCosta press conference earlier this morning, talked a little bit about a lot of different things. We highlighted a couple of them in the last segment. Offensive line has been probably the biggest talking point surrounding this Ravens team going into the season. And Eric feels like the offensive line is still right now. Number one, he felt like Tyler Linderbaum not being there impacted the offensive line. You know, he talked about the center kind of being the driver of the offensive line, yep, and it not him not being there for pretty much the entire second half of camp, maybe more. He feels like that impacted the offensive line. He did talk about how they decided to go young along the offensive line. He cited the salary cap as a reason as to why there's not a lot of veterans on the offensive line. He talked a lot about how you can't pay everybody, and you know, when you have the highest paid players at certain positions, especially quarterback with Lamar and Roquan Smith on the defensive side of the ball. He even talked about some of the deals that are looming around the corner for guys like Kyle Hamilton,
yep,
and those guys coming. You have to kind of shed cap in some other places. But he did say that he feels like in terms of the offensive line, he thinks a year from now they'll be in the right place.
Okay. What do they do now?
I mean, that's the question. Right now, I mean, it's...
I mean, everybody...
He
Cordell,
did talk about Roger Rosengarten. He feels like there's upside with Rosengarten.
No doubt.
You know, so
no doubt.
He's a real good athlete. Him.
Yeah. Needs to get in the weight room and develop a man body, mm-hmm, I think. You know, and develop that anchor and stuff. But he's going to be a good player.
And he talked about Makari and, you know, just him.
What did he say? Sixth man award?
Yeah, he
again?
Talked about the sixth man. He did use that analogy again with Makari. But, you know, right now, I don't think it's feasible for Makari to be a sixth man right now. You don't have five offensive linemen better than him. You can't talk to me about his value as a sixth man and how he can play all these different positions. But then when you have a couple of these positions where you don't have starter level talent at, that's where he's supposed to. I don't think the sixth man should mean only when guys get hurt. I feel like the sixth man should be as needed. And right now he's needed.
And they may alternate him.
Yeah. And I don't think that's, I mean, John talked about that a week or so ago, or maybe earlier this week, about that being a possibility. I've been throwing that out there for the last couple of weeks myself. We saw them get creative with the offensive line last year doing that. Would not shock me to see them do it again.
Well, you figure the right tackle next Thursday night's Karloftis. And Karloftis is a relentless, mm-hmm, dude. All right, then week two, you got, what's his name from the Raiders?
Who's Max a beast. Crosby.
Who's a beast.
Yeah.
Then you got Micah Parsons, who's a totally different animal, you know, with his speed and athleticism. So, I mean, you got if you're Roger Rosengarten and you've got those three to start the season, you don't want to destroy the kid mentally after 3 weeks.
Right.
And I totally agree, Cordell. I think Makari will be in there, will be alternating in there. Or because you can't give him help on every pass, mm-hmm, play, mm-hmm, Rosengarten, you know, with those guys. But it's going to be my biggest concern, more so, Cordell, and I don't know if Eric talked about it, is they're not a physical group yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe a year from now, maybe. But right now, as we stand here getting ready to play the Chiefs, they don't knock people off the ball.
No.
So that's my concern for Derrick Henry. Getting pushed.
Right. Hopefully and he's not getting hit 2 yards into the backfield, you know, as he's getting the ball handed off to him. I don't want to see his first contact being in the backfield. It needs to be, you know, beyond the line of scrimmage ideally. But yeah, to your point, that's the common thing you could say throughout preseason. The run game stunk for a variety of reasons. Just talking specifically about the offensive line, they didn't move anybody out of the way.
Well, here's my thing, Cordell, is, all right, the starting offensive line for the preseason, Josh Jones was at left tackle, Voorhees was at left guard, center was either Cleveland or, Samak.
Mm-hmm.
Falalele was the right guard, and Rosengarten was the right tackle. All right? So, and like you said, Cordell, the offensive line, the run game sucked. And you're not even going against starters, Cordell. The D-line you're going against is not starters, and you're not knocking them off the ball. My biggest concern with Falalele is he falls off blocks, and if you try to run wide, he can't because he can't get his head. I keep talking about it is if you're running a pitch to the right, you got to get to the guy's outside. You got to get your head outside of his head to cut him off. You got to cut him off. And if not, he's going to push everything back inside and the linebacker's going to make the play. And we've seen that with Falalele. Falalele just, he can't redirect. You know, and I don't know if it's 380 some pounds, 6'7". And he's a decent athlete, but he can't redirect. So can he come off? And he's a oozer. I think that was Joe Bugle. Ooh, they ooze off the line of scrimmage. They're not physical off the line. They just kind of ooze, you know, off the line. So, this we're going to learn a lot against the Chiefs, Cordell. They're either the O-line is either going to step up or Lamar's going to be running for his life and Derrick Henry's going to, you know, they're going to be like they were last year against Kansas City where – you know, they couldn't run a lick last year.
Nope.
So it's going to be really interesting to see. Next Friday, when we're talking next Friday, we're going to have a lot of answers.
I'm sure. Still on the offensive line, I did ask him about Joe D and obviously emotional side. And he got pretty, he kind of had to fight it off a little bit at the podium. But obviously losing Joe D non-football related is a huge blow in general. But for any team to lose your offensive line coach, especially one that's as good as Joe D was a week before the season starts, I mean, that's a huge blow in itself to a position group that you're already worried about going into the season. I don't feel very optimistic about the offensive line. We'll see how it goes. In other things that he talked about, the Ravens are kind of strapped for money these days. Their salary cap isn't that great. I think they
got $5 million.
I don't even think that. I mean, I was talking to one of the other media members earlier today, and he had said he looked it up early. It was around $2 to $3 million, depending on what salary cap site you looked at. But DaCosta, he talked about how he thinks they'll have enough money to get a guy if they feel like they need help. There's restructures that they haven't done to this point. So they have avenues to move money around. He did talk about the guys around the corner, like I mentioned, the Brandon Stevens of the world, the Kyle Hamiltons of the world, these guys that are coming up on extensions. And he didn't say anything like, oh yeah, we want to extend these guys, but
Linderbaum?
Yeah, Linderbaum. I mean, he did reiterate how they want to keep their good young talent here. So we'll play you some of that audio later on in today's show to be able to hear some of the things right out of his mouth, Eric DaCosta, what he had to say this morning. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll talk some Orioles baseball with Tony Pente from Orioles Hangout. How is he feeling about Corbin Burns these days? The ace isn't looking like the ace as of late. We'll talk to Tony about that and more next here on The Fan.
I'm John Aran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.